If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no. Witch Police Radio.
Hey, folks, this is what I do at this time of year. I do the rundown of my 20 favorite local releases of 2024. So this is the list. It's not your regular podcast episode in the sense that there's interviews, but there are interview clips. It's kind of a clip show where if I happen to have interviewed the artist in question about the record, I'll throw a clip in, I'll throw a song in, and kind of move down the list that way. This is the first sort of installment of these episodes. This is releases ranked from 20 to 16, and then next episode will be the next five and the next five and so on until we eventually get to my favorite five records of the year and ultimately the number one. Starting things off at number 20 is a record called Honk Skronkers by Rub and the Bums. This is something that just kind of came way out of nowhere. I like to, as people know, I like to tool around on Bandcamp and search for anything Winnipeg related. And this came up at one point. I started following the guy who does this on Instagram, and I ended up buying a copy of his tape. It's really weird, really fuzzy, extremely DIY. The packaging for it came with, you know, a homemade poster, guitar picks, postcards, all kinds of really cool shit focused around this Honk Skronkers record. And I didn't actually get a chance to interview him. I asked, I guess he's Rub of Rub and the Bums. I asked if he was interested in doing the podcast. He said, no, it's too shy, too not wanting to talk about this thing. And so it didn't happen, but I bought the tape. I really dig it. It's kind of wild. The description given on the Bandcamp page is skronk rock. And I don't know if that's actually a thing aside from this, but it's really fuzzy and buzzy and raw. And I really dig it. So no interview clip on this one, but here's a song from Honk Skronkers by Rub and the Bums. And by the way, Bums has like six S's at the end of it. Next up at number 19 is the album Sonder by Closet Judas. And Closet Judas is a regular, semi-regular, I guess, interviewee on my show. He releases a pretty decent amount of completely free music. He doesn't accept any money for his recordings. Even online, you don't buy the songs, you just download them. And along with that kind of attitude towards distributing music, he also provides a lot of background information with his records about the project. I mean, most of his projects are sort of longer form, thematic focused pieces of music separated into obviously specific songs. but there's always a lot of philosophical and historical and researched information that goes along with it. So Sonder is no different. Sonder is no different. It's the same kind of thing, and it's a cool album.
Albums, one of the reasons I really try to emphasize the idea of story is because this type of delivery method, I guess, is a bit more subversive because you can relate to it. It doesn't come across as preachy or judgmental or something like that, but you can have that permission to explore ideas. Like similar to what Philip Pullman did with his Dark Materials, like the Golden Compass series.
Yeah, yeah.
Like exploring ideas like that, but in my albums, a very micro form. So, you know, very short, very to the point. And yeah, I provide a lot of explanations about it as well, but want people to really, you know, think about it for themselves.
Yeah, well, as far as the explanation go, I mean, I know a lot of your stuff has come with, like, you know, thick documents sort of going over every aspect of what's happening and what this is a reference to and what your thoughts are on X, Y, and Z topics. But, I mean, this stuff you have on Bandcamp now from this record, you have the songs and then you have the lyrics and then you also have sort of the audio explanation of what the song is about and then what the background is and all that. So those are, I was going to ask you about those because it's not just you sort of reading something you prepared. There's an artistic element to it as well. And I mean, you know, one of the descriptions had like there's some echo happening on certain words, and then there's sort of this atmospheric background sound. What goes into that? How do you decide what you want to do artistically with those? Because they could very well just be, here's the document, I'm reading it, listen to the words, right?
Yeah, I want it to be a bit more artistic and philosophical at the same time, because I think both of them, there's a hybrid that I try to bring into things. With each project, I try to approach it in a little different way. This particular one, I asked an Irish philosopher named Peter Rollins to read the story that I wrote. He's a favorite author of mine. A lot of his work, he does what's called pyrotheology, which is just as it sounds, you burn everything, see what remains. If anything is good, you keep it. If it's not, then it wasn't meant to be, you know, to survive. But so I asked him if he would read it. And then I thought I could have an explanation pasted on after that. But I thought it would be good to almost, you know, a few lines at a time, give people an opportunity just to kind of think about it, and then just give a bit of an explanation about what I was thinking related to the writing of the story that I wrote. So with the explanations, sometimes, like with my album Subaltern, I integrated explanations within the entire album. This next album that I'm working on, I'm probably just going to tag it on the end, so that if people want to delve into the behind the scenes aspect of it, they can. But if they just want the music, then they can just listen to that for themselves. But a lot of it is going to come through in the lyrics as well, because I think this one in particular is probably the most like a concept album that I've ever made, in terms of it being actually thought out in order, rather than a whole bunch of songs relating to the big theme, but maybe not telling the story as closely.
Do you have a sense, just from feedback or whatever, of whether people actually are consuming sort of both aspects of this? Or are there some people that you know are just sort of listening to the songs, enjoying the songs for what they are at face value, and not necessarily going into the behind-the-scenes stuff?
I'm actually not entirely sure. I don't keep a really close look at the stats behind the things that I release. You know, once in a while I check it out.
Yeah.
But it's I think that's the thing with art. You create it, you put it out there, you hope it resonates. I have had, you know, some feedback that you know, some people have really enjoyed kind of the philosophical aspect of it. Sometimes, you know, the musical aspect. That's a good question. I don't actually really know what lands better.
At number 18 is Dirty Pain by Milt Homley. This is a weird one. This is another one that I kind of found randomly. I started seeing pictures of this guy with a cowboy hat and an eye patch all over my feeds for the various social media platforms. And I checked out his Bandcamp, and it was this really kind of interesting combination of country music and comedy. I mean, it was hard to tell when listening to Dirty Pain, the record, where the comedy ends and where the seriousness begins. And in the interview I did with Milt, it was sort of the same feeling. The project is to be taken seriously, but there's also a good dose of humor in it that really makes the songs stand out. And so I talked to him earlier this year. There's an episode of the podcast you should check out, which will be linked to in the show notes. Where do you think that this full band version of what you do would be sort of situate itself in the local music scene? Because there's the comedy side of things, there's clearly the country influence. Like you said, it's grimier and grungier, and I could see it fitting in a heavier show, not like a death metal show or anything, but something maybe a little bit more distorted than your typical country gig, right? So do you sort of have an idea of where you want this to place itself?
Good question. I mean, no, I guess, like, you're right. With the full band, it's a totally different sound. I've been playing a couple solo acoustic shows, and I'm almost like, yeah, I'm kind of almost bored playing it. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get the band together. But yeah, I guess because the songs are faster and louder and grimier, I think we would fit into more of like a rock, a bluesy sort of rock venue. I would play anywhere. I don't really have any shows lined up or anything. It's all just kind of new. But I would play anywhere, yeah. You know, anywhere where people want to listen. But yeah, it's hard to define. When I was starting out, I would consider myself sort of just a folk country singer songwriter kind of thing, but not with this album and with the band.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the how long have you been working on these songs on this album? Are some of them like, you know, stuff you've had sort of in the brain for a number of years now, or is it all fairly recent writing?
Yeah, a bit of both. I got started on this project almost 5 years ago, and a couple of the songs are about almost 5 years old. Draw in the Drawer. I think the first song I wrote. Love Don't as well, and then a couple are brand new that I just wrote a couple months ago. And then a few in between. Like, I've written a ton of songs, but these are kind of grouped together on, there's a bit of a theme going on. It's like, you know, I repeat a lot of words and phrases and yeah, the concept is Dirty Pain. So it's talking about sort of a certain time, definitely certain themes of love lost and love gone wrong.
Love Gone Wrong is and Love Lost obviously are a huge topics for any style of music. I mean, there's certain styles of music that do it better than others. I think country is one of them. But how do you sort of tackle something that is that serious and that, you know, usually anyway, a very personal, emotional concept, and then add humor to that? Because it seems like they would clash, you know, like you're making jokes, but then also you're dealing with this like the heartbreak, right? Is it easy to combine the two? Like, do you see an inherent humor in sort of the situation that people find themselves in when they're heartbroken?
I think so. I think I'm trying to find the funny parts of it. Like, I think, going back to this genre of country where I started, I think it lends itself to kind of, I can kind of mask it a little bit, you know, like, I don't know. So I like listening to Death Cab for Cutie, but I don't like to, like, none of their songs make me want to laugh. But like I can listen and like I can crack a smile even though he's talking about some painful things, and so I think maybe I'm using it as a bit of a mask or a bit of a something to deflect. So it's easy to go into the painful topics because I know I can just sort of go at him with at a humorous angle, you know, and so I don't have to take it too seriously. And I'm pretty self deprecating on this album, probably too much. But this is Dirty Pain, and the next album is going to be a departure for sure. But
right,
yeah.
Have you sort of exercised those demons on this one? Like you've got out what you need to say, sort of about that subject matter.
Oh, for sure, man. Oh, it's magical. What's happened since putting that out? It's like, man, this is the free therapy in addition to eat therapy. Yeah. But to release the songs, it's almost like some burdens lifted. Like. It just symbolically, you know, or something. It just feels good to have that out, and whether one person listens to it or nobody, it doesn't really matter. It just it's kind of like, here, world, go deal with, you can deal with this now.
Three, four.
Stains all over my pants. Some I can explain, some I can't. All the ladies point to laugh when I ask them to dance. I got stains all over my pants. Stains all over my pants. Making it impossible for any romance. I throw them in the wash next time I get a chance. I got stains all over. Stains all over my pants. Yeah. Ketchup and mustard and chocolate and custard whipped cream and the juice from a lime. Grease and gravy, well, placenta from a baby. Beer, bourbon, whiskey, red wine.
see it.
Next up is C. Sams, an electronic producer, indie pop, synth pop, synth, whatever, all the different suffixes that come after synth in the different genres. He makes electronic music, and he has a really great new record that came out this year called Bouquet. And before I even talk about the record, the music on the album itself, the actual LP, it probably has the best packaging of really any of the records that made my list this year. It's really cool. The cover looks great. The record itself looks great. Everything about it is very put together in a specific way. So this was an interview we did earlier this year. We talked about finding emotion in electronic music, which is something that sort of comes up a lot when I interview people who do this kind of stuff, is how do you get that feeling that you get from, you know, a more organic song when you're dealing with computers, when you're dealing with samples, when you're dealing with synthesizers. And so I think he had some very interesting responses to that, sort of how that informs the music that he makes with this electronic project. And yes, just check it out. Again, link will be in the show notes to that previous episode. You're definitely, obviously, making references to influences from the 80s. And I mean, tape, you know, that was sort of the format, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And actually, me knowing anything about synth pop or synthesizers or anything like that, I felt like I was always kind of chasing that sound, and I'd hear something on the radio, or I knew, like, you know, the sort of cheesy 80s pop hits, like I don't know, like Culture Club, or I'll even throw in Blue Monday by New Order.
Sure.
Even though they ended up being one of my favorite bands. It wasn't until I bought a Depeche Mode tape. I worked at a thrift store, and I had access to lots of tapes, and I was like, I'll try this Depeche Mode tape. I've heard people talk about Depeche Mode, and I put that tape on. I sat in my room and started playing an old Nintendo, and it was just so nostalgic. And
yeah.
It's hearing that tape, it was like the best of Depeche Mode or something like that. I was like, oh, these are the sounds I've been trying to find and like have more in my life. And yeah, it was chasing that down on tape that kind of brought me to where I am now.
Well, how do you get then from, I guess, from the point of hearing that and realizing, like, you know, light bulb going off, this is the sounds you want to create, to then figuring out how to actually make those sounds? Because I find that, I mean, even though I've had explained to me, you know, in depth plenty of times, the idea of synthesizers, it's very daunting to me as someone who sees people doing it well. And just there seems to be like this whole kind of like almost magic to it, to plugging things into a wall and turning knobs. And like, how do you get from, oh, I want to do this, to then suddenly like you're actually in the process of making those kind of sounds?
Yeah, I guess you kind of fumbled through it. The way I did it was, I was still in the phase of buying synthesizers that had presets that are, sure, like, okay, I'm pretty sure there's almost like that sort of soft horn sound. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I think so, yeah.
Like, wow. Almost like if you think of Africa by Toto, that kind of sound. It was the Micro-Korg XL Plus or something that had various dubstep settings that I didn't really need at the time. But it had that really great nostalgic, like, wow kind of sound, classic synthesizer sound to me at that time. And I just started there. And then, you know, you just start playing with the knobs, you get a little more brave, and you're like, okay, what does this do?
Yeah.
You know, I'll turn the synth off and turn it back on and nothing will be broken. And so, you know, I'm just going to turn this and, what was that? That was resonance. What does that mean? What does that do? And then the more you look into other synthesizers, you know, what's the best starter synthesizer? I can't say enough good things about the Roland SH-101, or they reissued it as the 01A, and just the layout of that synthesizer was so intuitive in learning what the workflow is to create a sound on a synthesizer.
Okay. Yeah. And so this new record you have coming out, it's coming out, I guess, next month from when we're recording this, but this is your first release in a while, right? I mean, I know you've had the singles kind of leading up to this, but this is your first full length in how many years now?
5.5, I think. Yeah, I think the first album was October 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wanted to release this one October-ish of 2023, but I didn't quite get the records in time, so I thought, let's wait until the spring. Kind of fits the theme of the record anyway.
Did the, I mean, how long ago did you have this sort of finished? I mean, did the pandemic play into this at all, or with the timing on the release? Or is that five-year period, is that just kind of your process of making new material?
Yeah, it kind of was the process of making new material. I only ever, when I made that first album and put it out on vinyl, that was kind of like, oh, okay, I did that thing. I don't have to do it anymore.
But you check it off the list, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll just continue to jam and post random things to Instagram. But I did this this monthly challenge, I think, three different times. It's called Jamuary. It's for any kind of songwriter, but there are a lot of synthesists that participate. And you basically write a song for every day for the month of January.
Cool.
I've kind of accumulated all these started songs, and I started to, I was just listening to these 1 minute clips of them, and I thought, oh, that song could be longer, or
right.
And then I just started to like pile them together. I was like, okay, I could probably make another album. I did start recording this album in the pandemic. But I did finish it. It was finished. November 2023.
Okay, so it's yeah. Fairly recent when you had it actually like ready to go.
Yeah.
see it.
Finally, there's a band that I talked to fairly recently on the podcast. If you're a regular listener, you would have heard my conversation with the band Moya Moya a month or two ago. We talked about theatricality in music. We talked about new metal and its sort of resurgence. We talked about all kinds of things, including their great demo, which came out this year called Demolition 2024. As always, I put these sort of best of list into over a series of episodes, usually three or four at the most. And so we can close it with Moya Moya. There's a clip from the interview and a song from the demo. And I'll see you next week. Well, I was going to ask about the demo. I mean, like I said at the beginning, I was listening to that today, and I find it's good. I really like it, but I find the way the vocals are recorded is really interesting. I don't know if I've heard anything that I can pinpoint that I don't know what it is either. It sounds like it was maybe recorded like in a different room or something. It has a very, very distinctively sound separate from everything else. And it's cool. It works. I just don't know. Is that an aesthetic choice or is that just how it turned out from what you were doing?
I think it almost like just turned out that way because we had some studio time booked about 2 days after a show that we had. Which unfortunately wasn't conducive to doing vocals after like 2 days after a show. Like it's just not really that feasible. I'm still learning what I'm doing with my voice. I'm not a pro vocalist. Yeah. I still watch YouTube tutorials and stuff like that. I'm trying not to blow out my voice. So the vocals were actually recorded separately, whereas everyone else recorded all together on that one day.
Oh, cool.
Because
so yeah, you can hear it. It sounds like it. Yeah, that's the theme.
It's
straight off the floor, like live, like one take pretty much for each track. And that's what you hear, what you get. There's no edits.
So is that, I mean, again, like you just said, it's kind of something that happened by circumstance because you played a show the day before, but do you guys like how that turned out? I mean, because it is kind of, it's noticeable. First thing I noticed when listening to it was that the vocals had this specific separate kind of sound, and I think it works, but is that something like, would your ideal recording session have all of you doing it live?
I think we'd have to try it.
Yeah. You know, we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. Yeah. We
definitely like how it turned out though. We're mm-hmm. very happy with it. We kind of just gave it a shot and we had that time book, like we said, and we just went for it. And like, we're kind of impressed with ourselves. I feel like we're like, and this turned it out.
It's a good way to be. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is what's the eventual plan with these songs? I mean, is it working up to an album or an EP or something more formal than a demo? Or are you happy with just these songs existing in this format and then moving on to the next thing?
I haven't decided yet. I think it's going to, we want to make an album for sure, sooner than later, yeah. Ideally. It's going to come down to what we come up with in the next few months and like how we're feeling about those old songs, if we want to keep them alive or you know, let them stay as they are,
yeah,
and move on from that. It's just going to depend, you know, how we evolve over the next little bit, because our pace is like, you know, it feels like every time we compose something new, it's like we take like a big step in the quality and how much we enjoy playing it, and so the reality is that by the time we actually you know, get our act together and make a, you know, something like a more elaborate recording, we might not be very attached to them anymore. We just don't know yet.
I guess
the songs still.
I guess you're a fairly new band too. Even the 3 year thing is, I mean, that's not all that long, especially with the pandemic coming before it. So I can see the styles are obviously going to morph and change and improve. But when was this recorded? Like, how recently was that demo made?
As in July.
Okay, so it's a few months now. Did those songs already feel old to you? Like, do you already feel like you've progressed as a band beyond what you were able to do on that demo?
A little bit. It's been a, you know, we've been trucking along, but the few things we have made since then, I think are a step up from that. I wouldn't say that we're, at least speaking for myself, I still enjoy playing it, and like, I think one or two of those, I'm very happy with, and don't want to see them go just yet.
Okay.
But like I said, I mean, we've been in this situation before, like, you know, a year ago our set was completely different. Like, we had some different personnel in the group, and like, you know, we had quite a few songs, and like, I think you know, after all those changes, like only one song like made it through, like survived those changes, right? So it's like, you know, and like at one point, I'm sure a few of us who were there at that time were probably feeling attached to some of them, and we just like didn't bring them back. And you know, now we look back and it's like, yeah, they're, you know, we've kind of just evolved from that.
Let's see it.